We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Buchman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Pagel. I represent Defendant Appellant Christopher Buchman in this case. Mr. Buchman is here appealing from a decision by the District Court to confirm the Marshall's sale of three parcels of land that were foreclosed on by the United States of America as a second lien holder in this case. And Mr. Buchman contends that the District Court erred in confirming the bids at that sheriff's sale by relying on an inappropriate legal standard, and further, that the District Court erred in refusing to reopen or modify the judgment of foreclosure to allow Mr. Buchman either a state court redemption period or a federal law servicing option. With respect to the background of this case, I think it's significant to note first some of the timing and facts of this case, because they play into both the valuation and the District Court's decision in that and the servicing grounds. Mr. Buchman first entered into a contract with the United States to borrow money in 2004. The default in this case occurred sometime prior to November 2007, when Mr. Buchman received a servicing rights letter from the farm loan manager working for the farm FHA, I believe it was. That servicing letter is about the only thing that appears in the record here to indicate that at any point the United States recognized its obligations to allow Mr. Buchman to retain his property either under state or federal law as provided by this court's own precedent. Thereafter, Mr. Buchman faced a foreclosure action filed by the United States in 2008, and a judgment of foreclosure was ultimately entered in April of 2009. Now, Mr. Buchman is not challenging and has not challenged that judgment of foreclosure. Instead, because Mr. Buchman was not afforded his federal servicing rights under the loans in question, he filed a bankruptcy in August of 2009, and that's where you get a significant amount of the delay in this case, delay that the District Court rather inappropriately or incorrectly took notice of or determined was dispositive of Mr. Buchman's ultimate attempt to save his property. After filing the bankruptcy stay kept this property in limbo until finally the stay was lifted or alleviated in some way, and the U.S. government went ahead, noticing up a sale on March 1st of 2010. The sale was held on April 8th of 2010, and a notice of confirmation, the final step being the confirmation of the sale here, was sent out on April 8th of 2010. April 16th of 2010. Just 10 days later, Mr. Buchman, through counsel, filed an objection to that confirmation and had a hearing before the court on the 27th. And the first issue Mr. Buchman raised through counsel was that the amount that had been bid on these three parcels was a far too low under the prevailing Wisconsin standard of fair value. The amount bid was in the range of, $332,000 for the three parcels. Mr. Buchman had been determined back in 2009 to owe more than that, just slightly less than that, to the United States. $327,000 was determined by judgment to be owed to the United States, with another $153,000 owed to the first lender that had priority. So this bid of $332,000 didn't come anywhere near paying off what the United States was owed. And that's significant because the United States was seeking a deficiency judgment against Mr. Buchman. That goes directly to the United States' claims that this appeal is moot because the United States retains those rights for a deficiency judgment against Mr. Buchman and is going to be seeking to enforce them. That's why we want this court to do something the district court didn't. The district court, in considering whether or not to approve that bid, had to face the Wisconsin standard of fair value. And that's where the legal error occurred. Having sat through this court's arguments this morning, I don't lightly attack a judge's decision, but the judge here was presented with some appraisals from the United States, and it was presented with some other appraisals from Mr. Buchman. Mr. Buckman's appraisals in particular set the value of these three parcels at $553,000. Now, Wisconsin law says you don't get a presumption of fair value unless the amount bid at the sale is the amount owed on the property. The amount owed on the property is some $480,000. The amount bid is $332,000. So there's no presumption in favor of the amount bid. So the district court has to consider the value of the property, and when presented with non-evidentiary appraisals from the United States and from Mr. Buckman, the district court actually considered neither of those. The district court said appraisals are simply predictions of the value this property would bring, and appeared, without ruling in that way, appeared to reject that in favor of accepting as the value of the property the bids that were made. It said in the record that those bids are...
The auction was competitive. The district court pointed out that this auction was well publicized and well attended. Do you have any difficulty with the proposition that when there is a commercially reasonable sale, which this obviously was, that result is, well, it's the market price, and the market is what it is, often better than, you know, the appraisers are making estimates of what the market is. The price tells us what the market is.
Well, I do have a problem with calling this a competitively reasonable sale, and I also have a problem with using the amount bid at a sheriff's sale as the basis for approving the amount bid. First, a sheriff's sale or a marshal's sale in this case is not an open market, fair market value. Fair market value and a competitive price is arm's length seller, arm's length buyer, neither one compelled to sell.
You know, when a willing buyer meets a willing seller.
Exactly.
What is the problem from your point of view? Was it that the sale was not properly advertised? Are you arguing that?
No, the problem is that the court didn't properly consider any evidence to determine whether this was fair value for this property. The only evidence the court appeared to accept was the amount bid at the sale. And if you accept the amount bid...
The judge made it perfectly obvious that he would have been persuaded if the sale were not well advertised or if it were not well attended. But I don't understand you. I just want to be sure I understand you. I don't understand you to be making either argument that the sale itself was deficient.
No, the sale was properly held and properly noticed. The problem is that the amount that was bid was too low and should not have been approved by the court.
How is this not an arm's length transaction?
Because Mr. Buckman is not a willing seller. He's selling by court decree. he's not selling at all. He doesn't want to sell. That's why we're here. So you don't have
Not saying there's any skullduggery involved.
There's no skullduggery involved at all. But the problem is he's being forced to sell, and a fair market value.
Forced to sell. He had a contract in which he agreed that he would sell if he didn't pay.
Well, he was
just being held to his promise. But the United States has every reason to conduct the sale to get as much money as possible. Your client probably isn't going to be willing. Certainly isn't willing to pay the deficiency judgment. The United States doesn't want to leave money on the table. Wouldn't make any sense.
I don't think the United States' motives or intent are relevant at all to determining whether the fair value was actually bid and paid. The standard under state law is whether the amount bid is so low as to shock the conscience of the court, and to make that determination, the district court needs evidence from which to rule on what the value of the property is. Now, the district court here used as its evidence the amount bid at the sale. And if you do that, you will never fail to confirm a sale. If the evidence of the bidding is the value, if someone bids a dollar...
Well, the district court was aware of the appraisals.
But the district court rejected both appraisals. The district court said that the appraisals aren't something that's going to consider because they're just predictions as to future value.
But it was aware of those values.
It was aware of those, but in that sense, too.
And when it made its determination of whether it shocked the conscience or not.
Well, in that sense, too, though.
Maybe if these appraisals had come back at $1 million, maybe that would have gone into the judge's determination and decision-making of whether it actually did shock the conscience.
Two problems with that is being aware of something is not the same as giving it weight or taking it into consideration in a legally cognizable manner. And the district court, in rejecting those, didn't say, I don't think that's a measure of value. It just rejected the appraisals entirely. But in addition, the appraisal from the United States in particular...
Well, how does it make a determination that it didn't shock his conscience he wasn't aware of the... and consider and weigh the appraised values? What else does he have to consider?
What he has to consider is the value of the property. The judge has to find the value of the property and then compare that to the amount bid on the sale. And in this case, what the district court used to find the value of the property was, in fact, the amount bid on the sale.
Why didn't your client put his money where his mouth is?
He attempted to do so through the Chapter 11 bankruptcy that he filed and the attempt to secure servicing options.
An attempt to avoid one's legal obligations. Maybe you don't understand my question. One of the things your client could have done was to make his own bid at the sale. He could have bid what his appraiser said the property was worth, or he just could have bid the amount of the debt. Right? All he had to do was put his money where his mouth is. He said, I've got this appraisal. I know it's worth $520,000. I'm going to bid $480,000. I'll make myself a clean $40,000 profit and wipe out the deficiency judgment.
Well, there's no legal...
But he didn't do that, did he?
He did not, no. And there's no legal prohibition against him doing that. There's a practical prohibition in that Mr. Buckman is in this situation because he doesn't have 10% down on $550,000.
Or more, a different way to put that is he can't find a lender who believes that the appraisals are accurate.
Well, there's no evidence in the record to suggest that. The evidence in the record, in fact, is that Mr. Buckman told the court that he had offers to the United States to refinance this through the bankruptcy and attempted to secure a servicing option.
Well, and the United States doesn't believe the appraisals are accurate either. Thank you very much, Mr. Pagel. Mr. Alexander.
May it please the court, I represent the United States in this appeal. Just to follow up on the conversation here with the appellant's counsel, this was a distressed sale. The appellant counsel is correct about that. And as Wisconsin law has made clear in both Bank of New York and First Wisconsin National Bank, that one would expect the value in a distressed sale to be lower than the fair market value.
Distress sale. What one normally means by a distress sale is a sale on short notice. There was plenty of notice of this sale. This was just an auction.
That's correct. There was plenty of notice on this sale. And as the Wisconsin courts make clear in Bank of New York and First Wisconsin National Bank, that when there's not a willing seller, when there's an order here to sell the land, one would expect it to be less than fair market value. So that's why the Wisconsin law makes a distinction between...
Why?
Yes.
That just sounds like economic balderdash. What produces fair market value is the auction. Nobody wants to leave money on the table. So if this property is worth $500,000, somebody could make money by topping the high bid at the auction. Right? In order for one to say that this auction does not produce the real value of the property, you have to believe that everybody at the auction, except the winning bidder, was crazy or didn't like money or wanted to lose money or something like that. And that's not normally what we believe of people who buy property.
Well, I think it's a good point, Judge. I think it, and
now that you've scored all your points for you, what have you got to say?
Excuse me?
I say, now that he scored all your points for you, what else do you have to say?
Well, I agree with the judge. I think that...
That's always a good position.
I think that... And I think the point, too, as the judge was mentioning earlier, the acceleration letter was issued in November of 2007. The appellant had 2.5 years to sell the property for the value that he thought it was worth. And he wasn't able to do so. And so if he thought it was worth $515,000, if he thought it was worth $485,000, he could have tried to sell it, and it would have been in his interest to do so. And the other thing to point out here is that this is an incredibly high standard to overcome. This is an abuse of discretion standard. So the court would have to find that the district court abused its discretion when it found that the sale did not shock the conscience. That's a huge hurdle here. I don't think it was met in this case. In addition, this is an appeal just of the confirmation of sale order. It's not an appeal of the judgment. Judgment was issued in April of 2009. Confirmation of sale order was in April of 2010. The judgment is where the redemption right issue was addressed. And if he wanted to appeal his redemption rights, then that was the time to appeal it, not a year later after the confirmation of sale order. So I would contend the court does not have jurisdiction over reviewing the terms of the judgment. And the other issue that we address in our motion to dismiss is, even with regard to the confirmation of sale order, this court doesn't have jurisdiction. The appellant could have stayed the transfer of the property.
I must say, I don't understand the mootness argument. We could wipe out the deficiency judgment in favor of the United States, could we not?
That would entail reviewing and vacating, or I should say amending, the judgment that was issued in April 2009.
But that implies that the case is not moot. We can do something. We can eliminate the deficiency judgment. Your brief's argument about mootness sounds like the concept of equitable mootness that is often invoked in bankruptcy cases. And actually, a couple of circuits have adopted that concept. But this circuit hasn't. It was expressly disapproved in a decision in 1994 that your brief doesn't cite. That concept doesn't exist in this circuit. In fact, it doesn't exist in most circuits. There are a few circuits that, in our view, have got it wrong. But why should we overrule In Re UNR Industries in this case? That's what you're effectively asking us to do.
Well, with regard to that case, I would have to look at it and brief it, because that was not mentioned in either brief, as you point out. But the cases that we did rely upon were Seventh Circuit cases like Meyer, like Countrywide, like Duncan, where the court held that there wasn't a stay, that remove this court's jurisdiction. Rule 62D allows it.
Stay, we can't order the property clawed back from the buyer. That's clear. But the point of decisions like UNR is that there are other things one can do. One can adjust money between the parties, for example.
And again, I would be happy if the court wishes to brief that case.
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. So if there are any other questions, I will rest. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our final